to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Felicia.
I'm Lauren.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
And it's officially summertime, baby.
Don't mind. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I wish my story was at all summertimey, but it is not.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Maybe I should have gone with like a theme.
Yeah. Well, it's too late now. but I am doing something theater related today, which I think will be fun.
Ooh, I love that. I'm very excited. Do you have any recommendations?
I have half of a movie that I haven't finished, but it was good so far.
What movie?
I started watching Run, Rabbit, Run, which just came out on Netflix. Oh, I don't know.
She's the Australian girl from Succession.
Oh, yes. Then yes, because she's definitely Australian. It's an Australian production. But it's really good so far. It's like about a child that is like reincarnated, and it's a horror movie. And yeah, so I have like 40 minutes left, but it's one of those things where I was watching it by myself really late at night in my bed, and I was like, I'm scared. So I was like, I'll watch the rest tomorrow, which was like that's an old move I used to do all the time.
But I'm so impressed that it like actually, it freaked you out. It got you scared enough.
Yeah, it's just, you know, creepy kids, you know, they're scary.
They're always the worst.
What about you?
Yes, that's definitely top of my list. I love her in Succession, and I'm very excited to see her do something else. But we have been, we just finished season 2 of The Bear last night. Did you watch?
Oh my gosh, we have 2 episodes left.
It's so good, right?
It's so,
Oh my God,
the dinner scene. Oh my God. That whole episode, Travis and I, we were like, we watched it and we said, we need to take a break because that was so intense. Like we had to like watch Bob's Burgers afterwards before we went to the next episode because it was so intense.
It was so intense. And I feel like obviously my like family is not as toxic and intense as that. But I think everybody has like a baby version of that, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's what Travis and I definitely were saying. It was just like, even though like, you know, it's not to that extent, like we've all had holiday dinners go so wrong because of like personalities and whatever. And you're just like, okay, this is like, it's like no matter what, it's like hitting close to home for like every family.
Oh my God. Yes.
It's wild.
And the cast is incredible. I cannot believe they got all those people.
I know. The cast for that episode is like outrageous. Like every person that came on, we were like, oh my God. Oh my God. Jimmy Lee Curtis.
It really is so true. And they did such a good job. It's, I mean, and it's like filmed so anxiety inducingly and it's just very well done.
It sort of reminded me of Uncut Gems. You remember watching that movie?
I actually never saw it. Oh, I know that's crazy.
It's okay. But that was a movie that definitely was like filmed and written in a way that was like anxiety inducing. And I was just like, oh God. But yeah.
Oh, I love it. I mean,
yeah,
it's
– yeah. Finish it. I got to finish it. Yes. We have to watch, I guess, because I'm leaving for summer camp on Sunday. I'll be there when this episode comes out. But we got to watch our last 2 episodes before I leave or else, you know, all is lost.
Yes, you must. It's really, yeah. It ends actually, I will say, in an interesting way. I mean, obviously, I hope we get another season, but I was kind of surprised how it ends. So you'll have to tell me what you think.
Okay. All right.
And then I think the only other thing I wanted to recommend, and it's because it's not doing great in the box office, but the new Indiana Jones movie is really good.
Oh, that's great. I just don't really, I think I've ridden the ride at Disney more than I've, or Universal or wherever it is, more than I've actually seen those movies.
Yes. No, I kind of feel the same way where I think I've seen them all maybe twice before. Like we just did a big rewatch and like, I love Harrison Ford. I love the like, you know, concept, I guess, or like I enjoy them, but it's not like, you know, it for me. Like I think it is for some people.
Yeah.
But the new one has the girl from Fleabag and she's incredible.
Oh, that's great.
I thought she did such a good job. She's like kind of like Hollywood glam now. Like she's like, you know, did like the Hollywood makeover, I feel like. And she looks great. She acts great. And I'm honestly a little nervous because for some reason it's not doing great in the box office. And I'm like, I really hope, you know, Harrison Ford's going to be fine. Nobody's going to look at this and be like, you know, Harrison Ford. But it's like, it's a really good movie. And I just feel bad for her. I'm like, this should be like her superstar turn.
Oh, and wow.
I don't know. I just hope it's, you know me and my feminist brigade. Like, I'm just like, I just hope it doesn't hurt her chances of
her
like
career.
Leading box office movies. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Because I think she's great.
Oh, well, that's very nice. And I saw you all dressed up as you do.
Oh, yes.
It was adorable, of course.
Willow was really the best outfit. James found like these like brown long pants at Target and he was like, I gotta do it. And I was like, yeah, it feels fair. Feels
you
right.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
So it was very fun. But that's it for me.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a theater curse today. One of the most historic and well-known theater curses ever, which is the curse of Macbeth.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
I'm also excited.
As the Scottish play. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know anything about like really how this started or why or any of that.
Yeah. Like it's something I had heard of before, obviously, where it's like, oh, you Definitely. Don't say Macbeth in a theater. Like I've always known that. But mm-hmm. I didn't really know why other than that it would like put a curse on your production. So
yes.
There's some other, you know, theater superstitions. And if you have any more that I'm not thinking of, please let me know. But there's other theater people, I guess, are kind of superstitious. So mm-hmm. things like saying break a leg instead of good luck, because good luck will give you bad luck. Things like the ghost light in theaters, keeping the light on
yes.
for the ghosts of the theater. And are there any others you could think of? I feel like there are probably others.
Yeah, break a leg and the ghost light were the two that I would kind of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I know we had like that haunted theaters episode, but I do feel like there's always like a theater ghost. And sometimes like there's that like, you know, they save a seat for whoever the ghost
saving
is.
Saving a seat. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Too. Yeah, but I don't know any others. Yeah.
Yeah. So this one apparently started from the beginning of Macbeth's history. So Macbeth is a play by William Shakespeare, and it is basically about this dude named Macbeth. He goes to these three witches who give him some prophecies that ultimately tell him that he is going to become king. And his wife, Lady Macbeth, at some point is like, well, you're going to have to kill the king to become the king. And they kind of start off this rampage of murder and magic and blood and all this stuff so that Macbeth can become the king of Scotland.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That was a very succinct summary.
Oh, thank you. There's a lot more that goes on. There's other characters and stuff, but that's kind of the gist. And so it's been said that Shakespeare, the first thing that is cursed about the play is that Shakespeare actually took real spells from a spell book that he put into the text for the three witches. And I guess I'll just read you the original. And it's funny because you've heard it just a million times, but I'll read it to you now. So the OG is double, double, toil and trouble, fire, burn, and cauldron bubble. And I feel like that's something far before I ever knew what Shakespeare's plays were. Mm-hmm. I had heard that in like various like either movies or TV shows or whatever. But I feel like
totally.
That was quoted a lot. And so it said that Shakespeare took that from real witches from the time, and that there is kind of a secret text within the actual script of Macbeth with these incantations that is threaded into the play, the language of witchcraft is threaded into the play, which makes it very dangerous to do on stage. And something I was thinking about that isn't really in my research, but just a thought I was having, is this idea of like theater as ritual and actors, you know, going up on a stage in front of an audience and performing basically a ritual every single night. And mm-hmm. if you are kind of giving the same, and that acting, like there's some research about depending on how you perform as an actor, sometimes your body doesn't know the difference between your performance and real life. Like your mind might know, but your body can get worn down from experiencing something over and over and over again if your body isn't clear that it's not really happening. So all this, yeah. So all this together, you know, kind of makes me think about this idea of like, okay, if this was a, if these were real incantations from real witches, you know, I'm just speculating, and people are going on stage and performing them with full energy and full like chutzpah every night, is that stirring something up? I don't know.
I think it's possible. I think it's possible.
So the first production of Macbeth, I think, happened in, let's see, 1606. And it was apparently just cursed from the beginning. So in 1606, at this time, at Shakespeare's time, all actors were men. I just want to say that first. So men played all the female roles, the male roles, everybody. So there was a man that was playing Lady Macbeth who apparently died right before opening night.
Oh my God.
So this is like the beginning of the curse. And Shakespeare, and this is a rumor, you know, this is like, take with a grain of salt, but that Shakespeare had to go on and play Lady Macbeth in the original production for the first however many shows because the actor had died.
And wow.
Because theater is toxic, the show must go on.
You just gotta get through that performance. Who cares who died?
Who cares? So that's kind of the first thing. Mm-hmm. And then from there, there's just been so many accidents that have been associated with productions of Macbeth over time that it's kind of wild. And some people, you know, say, well, when you have a show that has a lot of sword fighting and daggers and darkness on stage, like you're bound to have some accidents. And so if this play with, you know, that's a little bit tricky to produce is done over and over again, just in terms of like law of averages, you're going to have more accidents than Hamilton. I don't know. So
yeah,
in terms of the history of the production, there has been many a time of people using real weapons on stage and injuring other actors during sword fights. There has been a lot of Lady Macbeths that have fallen off the stage as she's done her sleepwalking scene. There is an interesting story of Sir Laurence Olivier. So he was in this big production at the Old Vic in London in 1937, and he was speaking his lines on stage, and a giant like weight fell from the rafters and hit the ground, which would have killed him.
Oh my gosh.
And it fell a foot from him.
Wow.
So boom, scary. And he continued the show. And
again. Show must go on.
And then another performance of that same production, a sword, somebody was like sword fighting and accidentally let go. It flew into the audience and hit a patron.
Oh my God. And
the patron, you know, was not injured by the sword, but had a heart attack because it was so scary. Yeah, it's all very bad. These are all terrible stories.
Terrible.
There was a production in 1942 of Macbeth where, and this is, I mean, I'm like, how did this happen? But three different actors in the production died. And the scenic designer, the day the show was set to open, committed suicide.
Oh my God.
I know, it's very bad.
That's very dark.
This one's a pretty crazy one. Charlton Heston, who starred in a version in 1953, he had been in a motorcycle crash during rehearsals, somehow made a full recovery, went on stage. And one night, his legs mysteriously caught fire. And it was later discovered. I know. It was later discovered that his tights had been soaked in kerosene
by someone.
They don't know who.
Someone evil.
Someone super evil. And then in a 1948 production, this is a Lady Macbeth story, British actress Diana Wynyard, she was playing Lady Macbeth. She had told a reporter that she thought the curse, the Macbeth curse, was silly. And while performing one night in her sleepwalking scene, she fell into the orchestra pit. So boom.
I mean, that is just like unbelievable, honestly. All of these.
And so kind of the rules around the curse are that you are not to speak Macbeth as the name of the play in the theater ever. You're only allowed to say it at a theater if it's in your text that you are speaking from the play. And some people say you can say it if you're referring to the character of Macbeth, but not the play title.
Yes. So that's how they do it in Hamilton, at least.
Oh, is it?
You know that line? Yeah, there's like a line that he's like, he's like writing to Angelica and he's like, I'm not going to mention the Scottish play. And then he's like, they think me Macbeth. So, like, using it as, like, the character is okay? It's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I don't get it. I'm like, it's the same word.
I know. Another reason that people talk about the Macbeth being cursed as well is that Macbeth is one of Shakespeare's most produced plays and is very popular. So there was something that happened for many years where if a theater's season was going really badly and a show was failing – they would close it and put up a production of Macbeth. So if a theater company was doing Macbeth, it was always like, oh, I guess they're not doing so hot. I guess they're having a bad time and they had to throw up Macbeth.
Oh my God.
So it was like a sign of failure. And so because it was so popular and it was like guaranteed to make money. If you do say Macbeth in a theater, the way you get rid of the curse, there's a couple options. One option is you have to run outside the theater, spin around 3 times, and either spit or curse, like say a cuss word. That's one way. A more extreme version is that you need to run outside and run around the entire theater building 3 times.
So that feels exhausting.
That sounds like a lot. But yeah, so... me, I'm sure I've said Macbeth in a theater. I can pretty much guarantee it because I'm just sure I have at some point. But I do love Macbeth. That is a play that I'd really like to direct someday just because it's so brutal and gory. And
you really should.
And like witchy and just there's so much fun stuff in there. But I guess if I ever do, you know, I know now. To never ever say it in a theater. And that's some of the reasons why.
Wow. Those were so many good stories, I feel like.
I didn't know. It's so crazy. I had no idea. I have one more that is probably not true, but I watched a YouTube video of this guy that said that there was a production that had hired 3 actual Haitian witch doctors to play the witches.
Uh-oh.
Because they thought it would be more authentic or whatever, or interesting or whatever they were trying to do artistically. And a critic gave the production a bad review, and the director entered the theater the next day and saw the 3 Haitian witch doctors on the stage, like chanting. And he was like, what y'all doing?
What's going on here? Basically,
we are taking care of the critic. And a couple days later, that critic had a heart attack and died.
Oh my God.
So stop messing with witchcraft, people. Stop messing around.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that's like a serious, I mean, yeah, all of that. Just don't mess around with witchcraft. Don't say Macbeth in a theater. All of it.
Yeah. But that's it. That's the Scottish play curse.
Amazing. Thank you so much for doing that. Now I feel like I can actually, you know, have some knowledge around that.
Yeah. Well, honestly, me too. I was like, I should know that. Like, that's something as a theater person, I should know more about.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, wait, I just forgot. I have one more. That is Abraham Lincoln was said to have been reading Macbeth the night before he went to the theater and was shot.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's another, like, classic one. Okay, that's it.
Wow. All right. Well, that's all good to know and scary. Anyway, okay, so I'm going to be talking about this man named Steve Carter. And I probably – maybe I just won't say anything more than that and I'll just kind of tell the story.
Okay.
But so basically he was – at the time that like all of this was publicized in the news, he was a 34-year-old software salesman from Philadelphia, really just kind of a normal guy, especially like when you see what he looks like. Like he just looks like an average kind of dude. But he, you know, had always kind of questioned his past. He knew he'd been adopted from an orphanage in Hawaii when he was 4 years old, but he really had like no idea who his real parents were or like why he had been put up for adoption. He'd always been told that his father was a Hawaii native, even though he had blonde hair and blue eyes. So it was kind of not really adding up for him. And I always think people like this, it's like, I would have so much trouble, I think, not knowing like where I came from or, you know, even if you do have like incredible adopted parents, like I just think I would have a lot of trouble with that.
Yeah.
So he was kind of – he was starting like the – you know, starting to think about having his own children, and it really got him even more curious about his own past and parents. So his wife purchased, you know, one of those DNA kits for Christmas and kind of it all – started to unravel. So the test revealed that he was actually of Scandinavian descent, obviously not like indigenous Hawaiian. And so he decided to start looking. In early 2011, he had actually just read an article about another woman who had kind of found her birth family. So this woman is like, I feel like we could almost do like another podcast about her because she was basically like abducted by a nurse at a hospital.
Whoa.
At a hospital. Yeah, like as a newborn in New York City, you know, a nurse just kind of like stole her and took her away. Yeah. I'm always like those stories always scare me too, where it's like it is kind of a crazy thing that you just like give your baby to this like hospital staff. And, you know, you always hear those horror stories of like babies getting mixed up or all of that.
Yeah, it's so scary.
It's really scary. But she had solved her own case by searching on missingkids.com and had figured out who her birth family was and all of that. And so Steve Carter was inspired by that. So he started kind of digging around the website and he eventually found a picture of a boy that looked just like him on this missingkids.com website. So it was actually one of those, like, I think these are always really kind of weird and interesting too, where it was like they had the 6-month-old baby and then they like, you know, like used computer or whatever technology to be like, this is what he might look like as an adult. And so Steve looked at this picture and was like, oh my God, it's me. So, which again, I'm just like, it must be so, I don't know. I don't even know how you begin to look through this website and like narrow it down. It's just kind of crazy. So he just had a feeling in his gut that it was him. And so he immediately contacted the Honolulu Police Department. He let them know his information and they kind of took it from there. So how that works is like he completed a DNA test and then the police kind of started on, you know, the investigation, trying to figure it all out. They were able to confirm that he was the boy on the website. So he learned that his birth name was Marks Panama Moriarty Barnes and that his father, Mark Barnes, had actually reported him missing after his mother, Charlotte Moriarty, went for a walk with him. And this was back on June 21st, 1977. The mother had kind of... It doesn't, like, different websites make this more intense or less intense, but she did kind of have a history of disappearing for a few days or a couple days. Yeah, not great. I also always wonder, like, I don't know, if your partner does that or the mother of your child does that a couple times, don't you think you'd be like, hey, like, you can't keep doing this or you can't watch our baby?
Yeah, totally.
But so she went for the walk with him on June 21st, 1977 and never returned. So she had gone to – and this, like, the details are a little different website to website online too. So some said that she was, like, squatting at somebody's house for a while. This other website I found said that she went to a stranger's house and, like, gave them a fake name for herself and her son. But Charlotte, like, the mother, based on this behavior, was taken to a psychiatric hospital. And so baby Steve, or, you know, his birth name was Marks, was actually taken and put into protective care. So because she had given a fake name, even, you know, or because she had given a fake name, and the name was Tenzin Amia, which I believe is, like, going for a more, you know, indigenous Hawaii kind mm-hmm. of name. So the mother gave that name. And so they never located the dad. They never, like, went through that process. They just, like, the mother had given the baby up for adoption, basically. And so this fake name just meant that they couldn't, you know, reunite the baby with any living relatives or find the father. So I guess what happens is they become a ward of the state. And so that meant that he went to the orphanage, and he actually was there at the orphanage from when he was, you know, 6 months old until 4 years old. So kind of a long time to be in a situation like that. I will say everything that I read online had, you know, had good things to say about the orphanage. It doesn't sound like it was, like, a bad situation, like I feel like we always cover on this podcast.
Like, haunted, horrible, yeah. Diseased, neglected orphanages.
Exactly. Like, it actually seems like this orphanage in the 70s was okay. But in 1980, an American Army officer who was named Steve Carter and his wife Pat, they were stationed over in Hawaii, and they decided to adopt a child. So they found themselves at the orphanage, where his name was now Tenzin, where he lived, and they were immediately drawn, I think, you know, for better or for worse, probably to his blonde hair and blue eyes. And so they felt that kind of instant connection, they said. They spent some time with him there when he was at the orphanage and decided to adopt him. So he, you know, because they wanted him to have this fresh start, and I don't know, you know, again, the blonde hair, blue eyes is a little weird. I don't, you know, I don't really know how I feel about adopted children getting new names, but they changed his name to Steve Carter Jr. after his dad. Yes, but they did keep his middle name as Tenzin as a reminder of his, you know, supposed Hawaiian heritage. So they eventually moved back to New Jersey, and he really lived, like, a pretty great, you know, had a great childhood, pretty privileged life. They tried to give him, you know, everything they could. And he talks about his childhood as being, you know, great, but obviously always had that kind of nagging in the back of his head of, like, where did I come from? And, you know, why do I look this way if I'm Hawaiian, and all of that. And so a year after, oh, I don't know if I ever really said this about the dad was, like, searching for him in Hawaii, couldn't find him.
Ugh,
was totally
so scary.
Yes, like, it's very awful. Upsetting to me, like, totally distraught. And it seems like, again, like, the details are a little fuzzy online, but I don't think he was actually with his mother. Like, I don't think they were happily married.
Oh, gotcha.
It was happening. I think – I'm not sure if they were – yeah, I'm not sure. Everything I read said that that was his girlfriend. So, you know, I don't know how happy the situation was. But a year after Steve Carter learned the truth, he actually was able to reach out to members of his family. So his older half-sister, Jennifer Monomer, was 8 years old. And this is the part, too, where I'm like, maybe the father wasn't even in the same place, because there are different websites that say, like, Jennifer was living in New Mexico at the time that she, like, found out her brother went missing in Hawaii. So, again, you know, not sure all the details. But she – yeah, so she was living – she eventually, like, was with the father – and was kind of the reason that they reopened this case to find her brother. So she was worried that he was dead or just not going to be able to be found. But she was the reason that they like opened the case back up, how that photo came to be on the website, why they like released that kind of older photo and drew that sketch or, you know, created that picture. I guess it probably wasn't a sketch, but anyway, so I think it's kind of beautiful that she was like, my brother's out there and like really fought to get back in contact with him. Mm-hmm. And so he reached out to his sister. They ended up speaking for hours, getting along really well. He also reached back out to his father, who I think was just so relieved and also just like so shocked to hear from his son for the first time. I read one article that said all he could say was just wow, oh wow, wow. Oh. So I think it must be just so insane to, after all that time, find your son and, you know, be able to have this relationship with him. And so, and oh, and the other thing I wanted to say about the dad too, the dad was like a mix between, you know, being horribly worried about his son for all these years, but also kind of thinking that there was a reality in which the mom just took, you know, the baby and they were living their lives together.
Yeah, somewhere else. Mm-hmm.
So he was very upset, I think, to like not, you know, to find out that the mom wasn't even with him and that he, you know, had been adopted. And so really that's like, you know, most of the information that's online. After he found his real family in 2012, Steve said he was just taking things kind of slowly with his new relatives. Obviously, like knowing where he came from and having that information was so helpful to him. But he also realized, you know, you can't just like force this new, you know, relationship and family. And so he was kind of just like taking things slow and seeing how it went. But I have like, I just feel like that must be like the most crazy life experience to, at like 34 years old, find out who your real father is, meet your real sister, and just like what those relationships could be. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I think too, the reason I like stumbled upon this case was because I was like, you know, we hear so many stories, obviously, of, and on this podcast in particular, of missing people just, you know, being missing and we never know what happened to them or their bodies are found. And so I was trying to find a more uplifting missing person
like a
story.
Missing person that kind of found himself, like found out who he is. And that is very interesting. And something uplifting. Can you imagine?
I know, on this podcast. I was like, there have to be some stories of missing people who are found again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, that's Steve Carter. That's the story of Steve Carter. Wow. And he was not Hawaiian.
But that's okay. That's great. That's very nice.
It's kind of a short and sweet episode today.
Yeah. I was actually – so you know something I forgot about, because I meant to text you about it, but I totally forgot. Because I thought at some point we had covered the Astor Place riots or mentioned them. But did we mention that in our Haunted Theaters episode?
Maybe.
I think so. But I'll just – I just wanted to mention this one thing in case we didn't cover it. The Astor Place riots happened because there was an American and a British man in rival productions of Macbeth in New York.
But Oh my gosh.
I think we did maybe talk about it in our Haunted Theaters episode, but it's hard to say.
It does sound familiar now that you say it.
But that's just another Macbeth tidbit that I was like, I think we already covered it, but I'm going to just say it.
I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I honestly, it's been so long since those Haunted Theater episodes.
Yeah, I have no idea. But yeah, but great
Amazing.
Job.
Yes, you too. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
We hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.